Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dory, the communications manager here at the Denver Audubon. We're an independent, nonprofit chapter of the National Audubon Society, and we believe that birds are not just beautiful, they're vital. They're messengers of ecosystem health, and when we protect them, we also nurture the well-being of our communities, the environment, and the planet. This podcast, The Curious Bird, is part of a larger effort to uplift what we call a voice of the sky, a growing community of people like you who feel called to speak up, act boldly, and care deeply for the future of Earth and all her wild beings. Our goal is to share the stories of inspired advocates and to reflect on the creativity, interconnectedness, and wonder that the natural world awakens in us. We hope these stories spark lifelong learning, deepen your sense of stewardship, and remind us all of the power of collective care. So, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, thank you. We're so glad you're here. Let's take flight together and dive into today's episode of The Curious Bird. I am so excited to have with me here today Rosie Briggs. And from the moment she gave a presentation for us for our Conservation in Colorado series, I was like, I need to have a conversation with her. People need to hear her speak. She is so passionate and so enthusiastic, and I just really admire the way you speak to the topics, the way that you do. You brought a lot of hope to them, and obviously we'll get into what those topics are, but I just want to first thank you for being here, Rosie. How are you doing today?
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me, Dory. I'm really excited to see what we talk about.
Oh, me too. And I just have to say, she showed up in the perfectly themed festive attire with a shirt that says, "Let's go birding together." And we've already been talking about birds and the house finches in my yard. And so I would love to know, before we get started on your topic of mastery, have you had any fun birding experiences lately?
Great opener. Yes, we were just saying that I think whether you're a birder is a good vibe check. My sweetie is more of a birder. He's better at birding than I, but I do find a great connection. And recently I was walking in City Park and I heard a great horned owl. And so I keep going back at dusk to hear her. And you should go.
I will.
See her. She's there.
Wow. In City Park. Okay. That's so exciting.
It's so cool to see someone so wild in like the middle of the city like that.
That's what I love about birds, and what we end up talking a lot about on this podcast is they're just this portal into nature and to raw wild wherever you are.
Yeah. And it's like magic.
It is.
It's like takes me out of the day to day to see them fly by. Mm-hmm. They can really fly.
Oh yeah.
They really do that.
They really do. I was laughing with my mom recently because she had a couple of mourning doves move into her yard, and she was just sharing how she could not believe how fast they rocket through the air because they have this kind of timidity, gentleness to them. And then you watch them fly and they're just like, pew.
Totally. Or like a hummingbird. You're like, oh, what is that? That's a fairy.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's not.
It is.
Earthly.
No. And yet it is. So brings you back to the earth. Mm-hmm. It's just this perfect dynamic fusion of everything. We were just talking about the feistiness of small birds too, and how that just brings so much joy.
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, we've been watching hummingbirds at the nature center. There's these two in a little bit of an open meadow that will go up, and you can just hear them. Like, it's almost their buzz starts to get louder. They're getting ready to just bomb down and
yes, I know. Hummingbirds are my favorite animal, I would say.
Yeah.
But one thing I love about them is, they're so joyful. They're just the embodiment of joy, but then they also are fierce. Like they fight, like they get feisty. And I think like that's an energy that I think in these conversations, like I like to bring kind of.
Yeah.
We're talking about these things that need joy, but also need like feistiness.
And ferocity.
I find inspiration.
I love that. So going off your inspiration from hummingbirds and their warriorship, if you will, I'm going to introduce Rosie as the Public Education and Engagement Senior Manager at EcoCycle. So could you walk me through a little bit about what and who EcoCycle is, your role there, and what makes you so passionate about it.
Mm. EcoCycle started before I was born, but I do feel this kind of, I feel like I was there because it's such a manifestation of what community action can do for me. Like, I work at this organization that is well established. We've been around for almost 50 years. We do so much. I can't believe what we've done in 50 years. And it was just a grassroots movement. It was just back in 1976, you know, just a group of community members like me and you said, let's start recycling. And they did. Yeah. And it was, you know, a lot of like the elder women in the community played a huge role, which I think is so, you know, kind of typical and so, you know, inspiring. And they just pulled the whole community together. It was the first curbside recycling program in the state of Colorado. It was one of the very first in the nation. And it came from this sense of, yeah, stewardship for these ecosystems and, you know, the creatures that live in them. And so to this day, we still act as the recycler for Boulder County here in Colorado. We're also one of the only mission-based nonprofit recyclers in the country. So we have, we're part of the Alliance for Mission-Based Recyclers, which is just, a group of us four, basically, organizations who we do recycling. And then we also recognize that recycling is so cool. We're so into it. And it's just one part of this much larger effort that we need to be taking to, you know, conserve these ecosystems, to reduce our upstream impact, to reduce our downstream impact, to take care of these creatures, to take care of each other. It goes very far beyond recycling. So we do programs and we have a facility. We do education. We're in schools. We work with businesses. We work with legislation is a huge thing that we do. So again, like, how do we really get to the root of this and recycle while we're doing it? We're really just, if it has to do with resource conservation and building a more equitable circular economy, we are taking it on. And I'm really proud of what EcoCycle does. And I guess, your second question, my role there is really just about like what you saw me doing, how we met.
Yeah.
Is just like, I go out and kind of spread the word about all of the great work that all of my colleagues are doing and all of the people that I work with are doing. And kind of try to connect that with this, I think, growing sense of concern, anxiety, and willingness to step up that exists kind of in the community. And I think that would answer maybe the third part of the question, which is like, it is a hard thing to have a lot of passion about right now. And I am able to do it because literally all I do all day long is talk to people like you who also recognize, of course, we have to be working on this. Of course, we have to be sustaining our passion and finding each other. And I think from the very beginning of EcoCycle's origin to how I find kind of sustenance in this passion comes down to finding each other and not feeling hopeless in isolation.
Yeah. So community is the foundation of inspiration and motivation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that you work amongst people like that within EcoCycle of just uplifting each other towards this greater mission?
Yeah, EcoCycle and beyond. I mean, I think I have so many peers within the organization that, they're my heroes. They inspire me every day. We have so many peer organizations like Audubon that, we're constantly kind of fighting the same fight, supporting each other, inspiring each other.
Yeah. And like you said, kind of like with birding, how it's a good vibe check. This type of concern and love and action for the environment is a very connecting way to find a web of people around us.
Yeah, we support each other in that caring and also how you find your people.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, and I think that more so than ever, we're in a space where we need to come back to community and togetherness over this long time sense of hyper individualism that has riddled our society and the way that we've built things.
Absolutely.
So walk me through recycling and the need to take that action has a profound effect on the greater ecosystem. How does it support us and wildlife and the planet?
Well, you know, I could have this be an hours long answer.
So we got time.
But really, I think when we talk about recycling, people think it comes down to kind of like, okay, will it take up room in the landfill? Will it be polluted? Mm-hmm. Will it be littered? Will it become microplastics? All of these things are definitely important. We definitely care about all of these issues. But with recycling, that's not really why we're doing it. We're not doing it just to keep it out of the landfill. We're doing it because it's this incredibly valuable resource that we've invested so much in to get where it is. Mm-hmm. And to get where, you know, to become a product in our hand, it has to go through so many processes. And all of those processes have such profound impact on those ecosystems and on the people that live there and the creatures and, you know, the atmosphere, the soil, the water, all of it that comes back to us. And so the story that I like to tell that I think I told when you were there is the story of aluminum, which I won't kind of get into the nuances now, but it's just a good way to kind of be able to engage with the origin of our stuff and be able to kind of picture what the impact of that entire life cycle looks like. Mm-hmm. And so in the case of aluminum, like, you know, you can kind of, most people kind of know, like, okay, paper comes from trees, mm-hmm. you know, roughly, and, you know, plastic. A lot of people actually don't know plastic comes from oil and gas. So maybe that's not a good example. But with aluminum, it's like, I have no idea where this came from.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like nature. It comes from bauxite, which we most often have to get from, you know, this kind of tropical band of the planet, just the middle part, which is a really important part to conserve for birds, for mm-hmm. you know, ecosystem services, for oxygen production, carbon sequestration, water filtration. There's so many reasons we want to keep those ecosystems intact.
Yeah.
And so when we make this decision to go in there and mine for this natural resource, which is called bauxite, then we have to create kind of irreparable damage. We have to, you know, mine and extract, and we have to blow big holes in the ground, and we have to build roads and deforest and pollute and cause erosion and all of these things. And then when we get that, after we've done all of that, and, you know, not only are we doing ecological damage, but it's a big economic investment. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into that. From there, it has to go get turned into aluminum, right? It has to get refined. It has to get processed. That can happen in a lot of different locations, but one that's, again, kind of helps tie this narrative together, and it is really common as a destination, is Iceland. Mm. And, you know, to think about that bauxite being sourced from kind of the equatorial area of the globe and then going up to Iceland, just transportation, that's
alone.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy to think about. And then when it gets up there, it has to undergo several processes to refine and smelt and, you know, produce it into aluminum. From there, it turns into, you know, a can, let's say, and that gets, again, the transportation of just that getting distributed to all of the places where we drink out of cans is mm-hmm. wild. And then there's a statistic that the average canned beverage is consumed in under 5 minutes. So if we think about all of those steps, and then you drink out of your LaCroix for 5 minutes or fewer, and then you bury it in the landfill, that's like, we have to do it all again to get a new LaCroix can. And we love LaCroix.
So we do. We love the bubbles.
Something about them. So I always say, like, if we were witnessing an alien species, like, investing so much in getting this, like, what we can only imagine to be a very precious resource, and then mm-hmm. they bury it in the ground and then they do it again, we'd be like, something's up. Something's not connecting. Or, you know, the other, like, metaphor I use is, like, if every time you, like, close your laptop, you just, like, throw it away and just buy new,
like, a new one.
That's single-use laptop. What mm-hmm. am I going to do? And so with the story of aluminum, it's especially kind of impactful when you discover that the alternative of that entire linear process is just, you can also make an aluminum can out of an existing aluminum can. You can just turn that mm-hmm. LaCroix back into another one and she's good to go. You don't have to do that entire global process. You can keep mm-hmm. it more, you know, regional. It saves 95% of all of the energy that it would have taken to make it out of that virgin bauxite. Wow. It's a no-brainer. It's black and white. And in all of those steps, again, it's not just that we're saving emissions. It's not just that we're saving money. It's not just that we're saving, like, time and effort, but it's that we're saving ecosystems. We're saving natural mm-hmm. resources. We're saving these finite things that we can't re-fix, you know, we can't redo. And so I think whether you care about, whether you're a person that cares about birds, whether you're a person that cares about environmental justice, whether you're a person that cares about just the economy and like local economy, recycling matters to you. It should matter. Mm-hmm. We should be doing it. And like, I think we'll talk about it, which I talk about a lot and EcoCycle talks about a lot, is that that's not where we can stop. We have to be doing that while we're doing all of these other things.
Yeah. Recycling is a tangible action right now. And it's a gateway to so many more things we can do.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's such a good point, because it's like, not everyone can go out and like buy solar panels. Not everyone mm-hmm. can, you know, buy a hybrid, but everyone every single day interacts with waste. And of mm-hmm. course there are still obstacles there where like not everyone has access to recycling.
Of course.
Not everyone has access to anything other than single use packaging. Mm-hmm. But it mm-hmm. is, like you said, something that we can all start to, like, we all have stuff. We all make decisions around yes. that stuff. And like you said, this is like an access point.
Mm-hmm. We're all consumers.
Yes.
Exactly. It's the reality, and it's what type of consumer are we going to be? Mm-hmm. And I want to touch on something that you said about there being a disconnect. If we were from this other planet watching, there's something not connecting here, mm-hmm. is what you said. And I think about that in the sense that we as consumers, as human beings, are very disconnected from these stories that you're telling, the origins and the impact of time and money and the ecosystem that goes into creating these very transient products. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there's such a disconnect?
Mm. Yeah, I think this is such a good question, because it feels like almost every, if not maybe all of the issues that we talk about in environmentalism and beyond, like, come back to this disconnection in mm-hmm. some way. Like, whether we're talking about our products, how they get here, how they're packaged, how they're disposed of, or ecosystems, who lives mm-hmm. there, who was there before us, who, like, what do those creatures need? Or our food, how does it grow? How does it get to us? What do we, mm-hmm. where, how does it grow? Like, all of these disconnections are fostering these other broader issues that we're talking about. And it's so interesting to be alive right now in this, yeah. like, well, for many reasons, of course, but we're in this time where we're more connected to, you know, everything globally in some ways than we ever have before. And at the same time, some of those same systems are making us more disconnected than ever before to the things that actually impact us every day, which mm-hmm. I want to go back to what you said before about neighbors and community. Like mm-hmm. one of the things that we're really getting disconnected from is
each other.
Yeah. Exactly. And our neighbors, like, mm-hmm. and our actual community. It's great that we're finding these online communities. Mm-hmm. That's awesome in a lot of ways. And if it's at the expense of our immediate community, then we need to readjust. The way that humans are is not why we find ourselves in this quandary. Mm-hmm. We inherently are not wasteful. We're not lazy. We're not stupid. We're not apathetic. Mm-hmm. I believe strongly that we are able to solve these things when we have access to both the problem and the solution. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, when these problems are directly in front of us and we're living, we can see the effects of them directly. They're not exported. They're not imported. Like, they're in front of us. I believe that we will do the right thing. We choose the solution. We come up with solutions that work. Mm-hmm. And when we're in this scenario where we're just completely isolated from both the problem and the solution and like what's going on, mm-hmm. then, I mean, we're just not gonna get anywhere. And so just the act of, again, connecting with each other
yeah.
is an act of, you know, resistance to that. And I think, like, as individuals, yeah, we need to get together so that we can systemically fix a lot of these things that are causing the disconnect. Mm-hmm. And I just, as an individual, like, this is the time to get really curious. And I think mm-hmm. it's like a scary process, because it feels like you're going to discover a lot of things that feel really bad.
Yeah.
And you might, and mm-hmm. you will. But I think going into it saying, I know that this is not my fault individually, so I'm not going to carry, you know, guilt and kind of horror and all of the things that I'll find in this. I'm just wearing my Nancy Drew hat. I'm just like getting curious about, mm-hmm. I want to make a call to see where my garbage goes. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll do a Google search to see, maybe I'll do an Ecosia search mm-hmm. to see where aluminum comes from.
Yeah.
And I think any act of connecting is an act of both bravery and kind of mm-hmm. activism.
I love that. Any act of connecting is bravery. And I'd like to add rebellion.
Exactly.
Too. Mm-hmm. When disconnection is such a rampant sickness, really. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast not too long ago, and the speaker, his name is Boyd Vardy, and he's from Africa, and he works in the wilds there with lions, and he says that he believes that anxiety is undiagnosed homesickness. Mm. And that really resonated with me. And I believe it speaks to the disconnection, the lack of home with each other, the lack of home upon the earth. And we are connected to disconnection.
Yeah.
And so how do we find these ways to reconnect? And I think, just like you're saying, start small, start curiously. So what is it that, and I believe this too, but I would love to know from you, what is it that makes you believe that people are inherently good and caring and want to give back?
I think I find it every day. Mm-hmm. I think I always feel some sense of climate anxiety. I think we all do. Mm-hmm. But I think I felt more when I was in school and learning about these things, especially in undergrad before I was working. Because it was like I was learning about these very intense things without seeing, like, in action what we're doing about it. And now, I've spent the last 8 whatever years only talking to people who want to do something about it. So, like, really my main job is people come to me saying, I'm outraged, like, I'm concerned, I'm anxious, I'm, like, ready. And my job is to, like, help connect them to other people who are doing these things and help mobilize them. Mm-hmm. And that's an incredibly inspiring position to be in, because it's just all day I'm just soaking up other people's, their drive to be part of the solution. And there's just no end to it. Like, there's just, it's only abundance of caring. And I think, like, there's statistics out there that show, like, the majority of people, we don't need to convince other people at this point. Like, if there's climate deniers, if you're at Thanksgiving and your uncle is trying to, like, goad you into an argument about whether climate change is real, you don't have to have that conversation with him. Like, enough people are both concerned and ready to do something about it that, like, we're good. We can do it. And I think, like, the getting bogged down in that fight is where we lose ourselves and we lose our hope. Yeah. And yeah, like, now more than ever, I'm, like, honestly overwhelmed with how many people are, like, trying to just, like, call me up and see what they can do.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. It brought up quite a few things for me. And the first one I think that I want to speak to is the discernment. And there are so many people that care, and choosing to direct our energy towards that is a beautiful way to maintain our inspiration and our mobilization, because there is enough of us. There's an abundance of us, like you said, and to mire ourselves with there is no control to change, because people have a responsibility to themselves. That is our first responsibility. And so if we can band together with those who already have that fire within them, we're going to be a wildfire of change. And I think that the other thing that you shared that I loved was your real life experience of being in college and learning about these things in theory is quite different than going out and taking action. And they're both important parts of our lives, the education aspect, whatever form education takes, and then the action part. But I think action itself can be such a balm, such a salve on overwhelm and paralysis by analysis, because it actually allows us to see the change happening, where when it's in theory, that can breed hopelessness, because it's like, is anything really changing?
Yeah. And in some of these environmental issues, it's like there's just an intangibility. Like, it's just so hard to conceptualize something like gigatons of CO2 or, you know, the amount of plastics. And, you know, like, it's if we can just sit down with each other, like just sit down with an environmentalist friend and pick up five pieces of trash like that, like you said, is an act of rebellion. And I don't want to also, I don't want to leave behind the uncle at Thanksgiving.
Like, totally. I don't, get that.
Yeah, this person is not a bad person. It's not someone who doesn't deserve to, you know, live in the healthy future that we're all working for and envisioning.
Absolutely.
It's just that it does come down to these systems, and people have been taught by these systems for a very long time. And like, that's another thing that I really like to talk about, is that like, we did have to be taught a lot of these things that are leading to this linear economy and like leading to pollution and leading to corruption. And the fact that we had to be taught shows me that inherently that's not how we are. And like, that's another thing that really brings me hope, is like, I think if you just look at an entire history of living in harmony, or, you know, living well with the environment and knowing how to steward it, we have evidence that humans know how to do that. It's just that now we're living in these systems and we have these contexts that didn't exist before.
Yeah.
But we at heart know how to care for our planet.
We definitely do. And so, as I know you love to talk about it, let's talk about it. How did we learn to live in a system that is moving in the direction it's moving in?
Again, they all kind of, so all of the issues that we're talking about kind of stem from a lot of the same origins. So it's hard to point to just one thing here, but I like to go back to World War II for this one. So during the war, we were inherently and necessarily resourceful. We were not throwing stuff away. When I was, one of my first jobs in high school was, I was a server at like the kind of dining room for a retirement community. And so there were all of these, you know, greatest generation diners there. And they, these people were affluent. Like, they were in that community because they could pay for it. And they did not let one scrap of food or like packaging pass their table. Like, they, again, this is anecdotal. Of course, this does not apply to an entire generation of people, but it was something that I absolutely took note of as a, you know, 16-year-old watching these like rich older people. Like, you know, if there was one scrap of food on their plate, they're like taking it home. They're, you know, asking for just a little bit of aluminum rather than a whole clamshell. They're like, a clamshell, that's ridiculous. I don't need that. It was just an interesting way to kind of look into, like, okay, these were the systems that you were raised in. It's different from what I was raised in.
Yeah.
So in World War II, we were also, yeah, supported by these different systems. So you could find flour sacks that were made of like beautiful floral material, because they knew that women at this time were making clothing out of that stuff, because again, they were resourceful and they were being supported by the systems around them to be resourceful, to reduce, reuse, you know, recycle. And now, like, I like to do, I think I'm sure I had this slide with you, Dory, that like I do a side by side of that, like a picture of that kind of flour sack alongside, like, if you try to buy something like cucumbers or corn, which they have their own coating, they have their own protective shell.
Yep.
If you try to find those things in a store, a lot of times you'll have to opt for it. Just, it's on a styrofoam tray and it's shrink wrapped. And you can't, you're not supported in doing anything better than that. That's your only option. And so like, systemically, you can see that we live in these completely different circumstances. We are still humans with the same, you know, makeup that our, you know, the generations of our grandparents and beyond had, but we are now given kind of no choice. And at the end of World War II, there was this big push for just, you know, economic growth, like, of course. And so it was this explicit kind of political push, and it was also this explicit kind of corporate push in this, especially the packaging world. And so I showed you, I think, even if you just search on Google, if you just search like post-war packaging advertisements, it'll come up really easily. It was really, some of them I think are really funny. Some of them are really jarring. But it's just essentially, they were saying, okay, well, we have this group of consumers. We have this whole country of consumers who will not throw anything away. And if they won't throw anything away, then they won't buy anything new. And so we need to redesign that. We need to figure out how to get more products into households, which means we need to get more products out of households to make room. And so at this time, you're seeing, you know, advertisements that are not even really advertising a specific product, but just like the idea of throwing products away. It'll be like a side by side of like some dorky mom who's like trying to juggle a bunch of like bottles to get a deposit on them, of course, mm-hmm. because they're reusable.
Yeah.
Versus some cool hip mom who's just throwing all her juice boxes away, and it's like, wow. Lug them around or toss them. Like, it's literally doesn't even mention a product. It's just saying, like, if you're used to being this loser who keeps things, you
waste is cool.
Yeah, like, wouldn't you rather be this hip mom who throws everything in the trash and just walks away, prances away? There's also like ads about domestic infrastructure. Like, there's one about Dixie cups, mm-hmm. where it's like, don't spend hours washing cups. Like, just, I don't remember the the verbiage of this one, but it's just like installing one of those Dixie cup dispensers in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like not saying even, it's not even talking about the Dixie cup. It's talking about the infrastructure that once you have in your home, you have to fill with Dixie cups, mm-hmm. which are single use. You just pop them back in. A lot of it was normalizing plastics at this time. Like, there's a lot of it that's like, there's one that's like, plastics as American as apple pie. And it's like this kid eating plastic. There's one that's like the best things in life come in cellophane. And it's a baby, like a newborn baby in a bag held by a stork. So it's like, it's don't freak out. Plastic isn't scary. It's not something that you should feel worried about. It's the most natural thing in the world. It's what babies come in. It's what you should be eating. So yeah, this kind of propaganda to teach us. There was resistance, by the way, because again, we're not programmed that way. Mm-hmm. They had to really drill it into us and give us no alternative. Mm-hmm. And they were saying it out loud, which is like something that we're kind of reading headlines about now is mm-hmm. like they're being sued because they knew the entire time, you know, the impact that this would have. But what's interesting is like they weren't shy about it at the time. Like in the 60s, there were these series of like plastics industry conferences, and the editor of Modern Packaging magazine, his name was Lloyd Stouffer in the 60s, mm-hmm. and he has this famous keynote speech that he gave where he says the future of plastics is in the trash can. And so he's saying, like, we have to design this stuff so that they have no choice to, we have to design it not to be recyclable, not to be reusable. We are designing it to be one and done. And then he comes mm-hmm. back a few years later and famously says, the happy day, and this is a direct quote, I'm not even editorializing. Yeah. He says, the happy day has arrived where no one anymore considers the plastic package too good to throw away. So he's saying, not only did we teach them how to do it, but we gave them no other choice. And we did it. Good job, guys. Mm-hmm. Way to go, Lloyd. There's just so many ways that they created this narrative that makes us think that it's our individual fault today. So we were put into the system that we have no choice but to exist in. And it's drilled into us to feel an individual responsibility, which is what creates this disconnect. Mm-hmm. And it's what tells me that we're inherently good. The fact that we all are walking around feeling so guilty mm-hmm. tells me that we were all born with this sense of care and love for our home and each other. And we right now we're seeing the results of decades of, you know, teaching and propaganda and forced systemic change. And now we have the opportunity to like be like, wait, are you feeling a crushing sense of guilt all the time? Are you? Oh, me too. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk about what's actually going on so we're not just all crying in our beds all the time. The kind of last piece of this narrative that I kind of like to share to illustrate this is the Keep America Beautiful campaign. Mm-hmm. And so the Keep America Beautiful campaign, the most famous in the 60s, in the 50s, they were doing some stuff. It was like very much like they had like a little white girl as a like a mascot, and it was called like Susie Spotless or something like that. And it was all about just like, just a clean culture. It was just all about kind of like keeping it's creepy. It's like suburban. I don't know. Yeah. And then in the 70s, this like movement comes, this environmental movement comes along that is more radical. And so we're seeing, you know, like the first Earth Day, we're seeing like rivers catch on fire. We're seeing dramatic things happen and we're seeing radical responses to them. Mm-hmm. And as we're seeing this like rise of not only explicitly caring about the environment, but calling out the corporations that are responsible for mm-hmm. pollution, we see this Keep America Beautiful campaign come out. Mm-hmm. And it's famously called the quote unquote crying Indian ad. Mm-hmm. And it was extremely effective. It's like in my undergrad, it was taught as one of the most effective environmental like behavior change mm-hmm. campaigns in history. And it was. And so the weird thing about it is, so it's this, if you haven't seen this ad, it's very famous, but it's this indigenous man standing in a river and a car, like there's so much trash in the river. It's just all single use packaging. A car comes by and someone literally throws a bag of trash out the window. Yeah. And it like, which is silly, but because they taught us to throw stuff away like that. Mm-hmm. And they gave us no alternative. So like, anyway, so someone, it's funny to think of someone throwing an entire bag of trash out the window, but that is the system that they created. So someone throws a bag of trash out the window. It lands at the feet of this indigenous man. It pans up. He's like in his indigenous garb and a tear, you know, goes down his cheek. And that was a very, you know, it's a very famous tear.
Yeah.
And then the tagline for this ad is people start pollution, people can stop it. Mm. And so explicitly what this ad is saying is, you guys, look at all of this pollution around you. You did this. Like, you are the one who just drove that car by and threw your trash out the window. Look what you're doing to this man. Look what you're doing to the environment. Don't you care? Wake up. Like, my mom was saying, she was like, I remember that campaign. I went out, right? Like, I cried and then I went outside and I picked up a bunch of trash and I have every day since.
Yeah.
And again, like, what that tells me is like, we care because we watched that. Like, everyone watched that ad and said, like, oh my God, like, I don't remember filling a river with trash, but like, yeah, I'm willing to step up and take care of it. And if you look at who put out that ad, who's behind Keep America Beautiful, it is those exact same packaging corporations. It's all of the, you know, all of the corporations who are the biggest polluters out there. What's so funny to me is like thinking about them coming up with that ad, they literally like had to take their own packaging and physically put it in a river to like shoot this ad. Wow. Like, that's their stuff. Like, it has their logos on it even. Mm-hmm. And then they hired an Italian American man, by the way, this person was not an indigenous actor, to like point at the pollution that they made, tell you it's your fault, and then create an entire generation and beyond who then believes that people start pollution, people have to stop it. So these corporations are literally seeing this rise of environmentalism and they're seeing this explicit calls for producer responsibility. They're seeing these environmentalists say, hey, you guys are the ones polluting. You guys are the ones creating these packages. You need to do something about it. So instead of doing something about it, what they do is come out with this ingenious campaign that says, oh, actually, it's not us. It's actually you guys. And if you really cared about it, you would do something. And so then it worked. Like, we did individually do something about it. And to this day, we feel, you know, like it's the same thing as like the carbon footprint calculator. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like the concept of we should each be able to calculate our own individual footprint so that I can then take a shorter shower or like, you know, I can adjust. Mm-hmm. And that concept was created by BP, by British Petroleum, literally. Like, they hired someone to come up with that campaign so that they can say like, ah, get off her back. Like, I know I spilled billions of barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico, but you guys took a 4-minute shower, so take a good long look in the mirror. You know, like, it's so ironic and ridiculous.
Even hearing it again, there's just this a level of shock and a level of relief in the sense of knowing that it isn't my fault.
Yes.
And knowing that these inclinations I've had that things are working against us is not wrong, because I think there are many times living in this society where it can feel crazy making. It feels like gaslighting.
Yes.
And so they have taken this human nature that you and I believe in, our goodness, our caring, and manipulated it, manipulated us.
Again, to come back to that act of finding each other, mm-hmm. that act of creating community is so, it's like how important friendship is if you're in a toxic relationship, mm-hmm. where if you find yourself in a toxic relationship and you're isolated from all your friends, then whatever mm-hmm. narrative that person is telling you is the narrative that you go along with. Of yeah. course, you have no other context. Mm-hmm. The second you go hang out with your friends and you like tell them what this toxic person did, they're like, girl, mm-hmm. that's... Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. not okay. This is like, we have this reality that we can ground you in. Mm-hmm. And that's to me what finding like fellow mm-hmm. community members, finding fellow environmentalists, finding fellow people who care about each other does for me is like, if you listen enough to narratives that these very powerful corporations are able to control and have for a very long time, it's mm-hmm. easy to go along with it and it's easy to believe it. And if we can ground each other in reality and be like, actually, that's an insane way to do things. Actually, mm-hmm. that's incredibly unjust and we shouldn't stand for that. Like, that's where we can get there, actually.
Yes. And my mom and I, we used to call these experiences that you're speaking to the blender. You can't mm-hmm. see what's happening when you're inside the blender. And so to step out and have conversations with other people can give you that clarity, that reflection. Because being in that state of feeling so destabilized and so powerless, that is, I'm going to branch out and say that that's what they want.
Exactly.
You know, and so how do we find resource in each other? And I think that I really enjoy that you're bringing up the word narrative a lot, because I am a firm believer that we humans are storytellers and language creates our perceptual bubble. So it becomes our limit. It becomes what confines us, but it also can break those limits and those shackles, if you will, once we start creating new story, creating new language, and we're super receptive to narrative and story. Mm-hmm. And so as storytellers, how do you think we can start to shift that narrative to something that is more inclusive, beneficial, supports equality, supports interconnectedness?
I think each of us can figure out which kind of part of the narrative we can bring, or how, what we can bring to the narrative collectively, rather. Mm-hmm. As you said, of course, we need to make it more diverse. Of course, we need to make it more inclusive. Of course, we need to have all of our efforts be constantly expanding to make room for those things and invite them to be led by those things. And I think that as an individual trying to make a difference, I think like identifying your specific tool belt mm-hmm. and again, looking at it as a group project mm-hmm. is like what's so, like, you don't have to figure out, okay, oh my God, I have to go talk to millions of people and tell them what's going on. Mm-hmm. You can say, okay, I'm part of this larger movement that's doing that, and something that I'm really good at. So for me personally, I am a bit of a goofball. And so love it. That's why we're vibing. Yeah. Bird people, goofballs. We're well equipped. So like you said, like so much of this is so isolating and so much of it is based around fear. And the narratives around this have been almost exclusively based around fear. Mm-hmm. Like whether it's a narrative being fed to you by kind of a polluter or by a pro-environmentalist source, either way, it's gloom and doom. Mm-hmm. But I think that silliness is deeply important here, because like mm-hmm. fear is what got us here. And the more we can laugh at polluters with your friends, like just like feeling like you're gossiping mm-hmm. about someone you don't like, but it's like this faceless corporation that is mm-hmm. polluted. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like you said, like they don't want us to be silly. Like they don't want us to be mm-hmm. laughing, giggling mm-hmm. at this. Like they don't want us to be able to kind of transcend the like doom that has been set upon us by lifting each other up and being silly. Yeah. And I think it's easy to be silly about this sometimes because it's like just so absurd. I mean, just the story of aluminum. We're like, what? Like, yes. How is that how we do things?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that with narrative, yeah, I think like the more we can get curious, the more we can get to the bottom of things, and the more we can like each recognize, okay, this is not all on me. This is collective. What can mm-hmm. I individually bring? And what is it that I can bring that will sustain me in that? Mm-hmm. What is it that actually feels good for me to bring?
Every time you speak, I'm like, oh, I want to comment on that. I want to comment on that. I want to comment on that. But I think that, you know, so many things. And the first one is kind of cycles us back to the spectrum of disconnection and connection. And so this rampant disconnection has made us to believe that we are silos, that we are islands, and that we have to do it all alone. And not only do we not have to, we can't. And sometimes that feeling of I can't do it on my own is the first thing to make us not take an action.
Exactly.
And remembering that we're not doing it alone. I love the imagery you gave of a group project, you know, just hanging out with your friends. Everyone's bringing their different strengths. And I like to see it sometimes in my own mind is like we're all these different little fulcrum points on a web. And mm-hmm. if we can hold solid our little piece, we bring integrity to the web of everything. And if mm-hmm. we're trying to stretch too thin, that pizza dough that you're rolling too thin is just going to split into pieces. Mm-hmm. And so what is that for us? And I also love that you brought up the fact of shifting the narrative within ourselves. How can I take a moment? How can we take a moment to shift the perspective? And for me lately in my own life, that's been coming back to the idea of miracles and magic and mm-hmm. The fact that we are on a planet hurtling through space around a sun in an infinite universe, and I'm here at the same time as you, Rosie, and thousands of miles away, there's a creature that looks like a giraffe, and another thousands of mm-hmm. miles away, there's a quetzal. Like, I get to live here? Talk about the word wild.
Yeah.
It's wild. And bringing myself back to that place of opportunity also brings me to possibility rather than the oppression of hopelessness that these corporations are cultivating.
Absolutely. I think that's such a good, because I've been coming back to connection with each other mm-hmm. because that's what I do. I'm a community organizer around these mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
But I think from any of our perspectives, connecting with the planet itself is mm-hmm. also yeah, a huge disconnect and something that is so just in itself an act of activism, of mm-hmm. care, of mm-hmm. rebellion, of stewardship.
I've been thinking a lot about creativity and how worry itself is a form of creativity because mm-hmm. it's imagining mm-hmm. possibilities. Yeah. It's imagining negative ones. Mm-hmm. So how can I take shifts in each moment where I might be feeling worry and recognize this is creativity directed in a misguided direction? How can I direct this towards something that feels more true, that feels more beautiful, that feels more whole? And whatever anyone's word is that feels more like the gratitude of being here.
I feel like you're just saying all the things that I've been like thinking about and like writing about lately. Like my friend the other day was saying how she was reading a dystopian novel mm-hmm. about the future. And we were like, you know what's so weird? Like, name me a novel in the future that isn't dystopian. Like,
that's true.
Never, yeah. There's not a section for utopian future mm-hmm. fiction. Mm-hmm. And like, why? That's so funny. Like, why wouldn't it even be half and half? Yeah, like dystopian, totally. Utopian.
Yeah.
Why are we all going there? And it's like you said, it's so, the imagining is, mm-hmm. like, we can't arrive to a reality that we have never imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we are creating it as we go. We mm-hmm. can't just, like, show up to a utopian society having been only picturing dystopian ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, exactly as you said, like, we should just be making efforts all the time to just, like, let's just sit down with our friends and just, like, list best case scenario. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just think mm-hmm. about, like, best case scenario. Like, what do we do? Because we can't, like, if all we're doing is mitigating problems and not dreaming of solutions and how to get there, then we're just not going to get there. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagination is such a powerful tool that we have. And imagination is the foundation. It's the jumping off point of creation.
Yeah.
And so how do we imagine this better world, like you're saying? And imagining coexisting with creatures and all these beautiful animals that we're talking about, and holding hands as a society and dancing together and seeing skies that we see all the stars again. Mm-hmm. No, and I love the point that you had brought up a little bit ago, and I think about this a lot myself, is extending community beyond our human kin to the wild kin that we share the planet with, and that mm-hmm. we can really do that anywhere. We can do that with the pigeon we're sharing the sidewalk with, who lives this vastly incredible life that if we approach with curiosity, we'll find out how amazing they are, and that ducks see in 360 degree vision. Like, what?
Again, that's a Neopet.
No, that's
insane.
And you know, how can we co-create, coexist? And I was just feeling so grateful the other morning because I put out a bird bath a few days ago, and a mourning dove has started to come to the yard that hasn't been here before. And every morning around 9:30. He, she comes and bathes in the bath, and just thinking that we can set out a dish of water and provide a little corner of habitat restoration, a little corner of support for other beings. Mm-hmm. And it's simple. We can recycle a dish that we have at home and put it out with a rock in it so the wind doesn't blow it over. You know, just make sure you dump it out every couple of days to keep it clean. But, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think, like you were saying, the act of noticing these little miracles and just mm-hmm. like look beyond, being on the lookout for magic, I feel like is so baked into birding. Mm-hmm. Like, just to bring us back to birding, like it's an entryway to kinship, to connection, to observation. I think that another thing that's exciting is that we don't have to, like, we can imagine whatever we want. We can have. Yeah, we have limitless futures of like what mm-hmm. we could be building together. And I think so much, we put so much pressure on ourselves to like discover how to do that. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I feel like mm-hmm. I get a lot of like, oh, I just hope someone like invents like carbon sucking, sequestering technology, or like, mm-hmm. I, you know, there's just a lot of like, oh my gosh, like, this is so unprecedented. This is so scary. What could we do otherwise? Like, everything comes in plastic. So how could we reimagine that? And I think what's exciting is we can reimagine it to be whatever we want. And also, we don't even have to. We can just do things that we used to do that worked really mm-hmm. well in a lot of cases. Like, even going back to World War II, like in living memory, you talk to your grandparents, they, if you're like, what was X packaged in? They will probably say, not plastic. They'll probably say something mm-hmm. different. And it's probably something that is still a totally reasonable option today. Mm-hmm. And it's probably a product that we still use. Mm-hmm. Like, even in living people, we don't have to relearn that. Like, mm-hmm. we can just tap back in. One thing, again, that's really hopeful is like, this is just a tiny, tiny little piece of human history. And if we can
yeah.
ground ourselves in everything that we can learn from people who came before us.
Mm-hmm.
Then we don't even have to invent something crazy. And like,
yeah, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to feel the impossibility of pulling something wholly new out of the ethers. Exactly. Yeah. We have the resources here. It's like, we don't need to go out there. We need to come back here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so much of it is ecological knowledge that we don't mm-hmm. even have to hold as humans.
Mm-mm.
Of course, every creature knows exactly how to mm-hmm. exist and survive. And you know, even when we're looking at something like compost, which EcoCycle works with a lot too, it's like, again, it's funny. Like, I laugh all the time at work, even though I'm like, well, we're talking about literally a life or death situation. I'm yeah. constantly giggling because it's like, okay, we live again in this magical environment where it's like, you don't even have to do anything, babe. The tree mm-hmm. will just drop the leaves, and then the leaves
yeah.
will give nutrients to the tree, and the tree will grow again and do it again. And we're like, we have to bag the leaves and put yeah, them
throw
in a
plastic bag
and then
there.
We have to bury it in the earth. And the tree is like, what are you doing? Like, you literally, all you had to do was nothing. Like, why are you, like, we're the ones who like short-circuited all of these things. And if we could literally just let them do what they do, not like the deep inherent wisdom of nature can get us out of this, like nature-based climate solutions. Nature knows exactly how to balance the carbon cycle, and
mm-hmm.
we just have to stop being so deeply silly in how we're interacting with it.
Yeah. I think what keeps coming up for me, the word that wants to be pulled forth is trust. We have to learn trust again on so many levels. And one of those levels is a self-trust, a trust in the fact that we are good people because we have been manipulated into believing we're not. And so how do we gain that self-trust back into, one, like I said, trust that we're good people, and then trust the earth too in her process, in the ecosystem's process, without putting these disruptions in the life, nutrient, and water cycles.
Mm-hmm. And I think like that again goes back to narrative that like, I think we have this narrative in environmentalism that it's like people who are not on board with the movement look on as if what's being fought for is the environment itself. Do you know what I mean? Like even the term tree hugger is like, how silly that you would be prioritizing this tree over humans, maybe, is the perspective. And then, of course, from the environmentalist perspective, it's like, hello, it's not for, like, the planet has been alive, has been around for incomprehensible amounts of, like, we are a tiny, tiny, tiny little blip. Of course, if we blow ourselves up, the planet will not cease to.
Yeah, she'll be all right.
She'll be fine. Like, the entire thing about the planet is that it regulates its own systems. It has perfect systems of input and output that self-regulative there if they're thrown off, and we are throwing it off, and like we're fighting for ourselves. And so it's such a funny manifestation of that disconnect to think that like we are even two separate entities to be talking about. Of course we're the same entity as the planet, as the trees. Of course there is no us without that, but I think what we should think more about is, of course there's that without us.
I got to know, because I love that you said you're a goofball and silly. And I think that humor, too, is itself a rebellion. It's one of the most magical elements of being alive is humor. What helps you to get to those spaces of silliness and play, goofiness, humor?
Yesterday, I said, I need to just go on a walk and reconnect and do some reconnecting. And I like stopped at this little lake. I was in Lafayette, and there was a red-winged blackbird and there was a robin, and they were both just coexisting. They were just vibing next to each other on this little log in the lake, and they started taking a bath, and I was laughing aloud. Like there is so much silly, again, like penguins is a great example, but there's just so much silliness in nature itself. Like creatures, like spend 1 hour with a cat. Like nature is hilarious, but I was laughing. I was truly cackling aloud just on my walk by myself, because the birds were, you know, they're doing that thing where they're in the water and they're just like, bah, 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 bah. Like they just like all of a sudden just like explode in little flaps. And it's so silly. It's so goofy. There's just like physical things that you don't even have to tap into. That just if you go outside, put your feet on the ground, watch a robin take a bath, like silliness is all around. If we, again, tune into just literally what's in front of you rather than like reading about this horrible thing that you could never comprehend.
It's like an allowance, a receptivity. And I love that you brought up nature is funny, because I laugh so many times a day at nature. I find it hilarious, or them hilarious, all the beings, and allowing the stories to come, allow them to tell me the stories, you know, and of course it's going to be my human perspective on it. But I believe that part of the joy of being here is an engagement with the story of other animals, however that comes through to us. And that relatability, we protect what we connect with, and relatability is one of the main forms of connection. And so, to foster that relationship, that relatability with animals is, again, fuel for fighting for them in whatever way that fight looks like. I find squirrels to be some of the funniest animals. Yes. And this morning I was sitting on my little back porch, and all of a sudden, like, a leaf hit me on my shoulder, and then one hit me on my other shoulder, and then it got tangled in my hair. And I look up and there's just a squirrel like sawing off leaves and dropping them on me. And I just, you have to laugh that I'm sitting here in this moment where a squirrel is dropping leaves on my head.
So funny. Yeah. Like, what do they think we are? Like, yeah. We are ridiculous to them. My God. For sure.
Oh, yeah. What that brings up for me, speaking to shifting towards the humor, is a way that shifts us from this built-in negative mindset that we have. Like, throughout history, we had to, in some ways, seek the danger to survive. And I think there's still some parts of us that are seeking the danger, the separation. And so to shift things into humor is to actually be more in a state of acceptance where we are, that we can embrace this moment and see it in a positive way.
Right. Like, we forget that we are literally just little creatures. Like, we're the same as the squirrel. We're just a little creature on this ridiculous.
We're just little Pokemon too.
We are arguably the weirdest Pokemon. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. But like, yeah, the ones that wear clothes. But I think we forget that we're part of nature and we forget that we're creatures. Like, personally, I am very goofy, but I am also very anxious, especially like
with same.
Climate stuff. That's all we're talking about. Like, how would we not hold some anxiety for that?
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's like we get so human about this and so analytical and so whatever, you know, cerebral about it, that we also lose like all of the ways that our little animal bodies know how to keep us going. And like, so when we do read something like a headline that says, whatever, the Pacific's garbage patch is now bigger than whatever country, like that activates in our little animal brains the same thing that like you're in danger, you're in immediate danger. Yes. And because we have this lack of access to solving that insane problem, then we're just like living in a state of activation of like, help, I can't do it. And just the act of silliness switches on a different part of your brain that helps calm down that like prey or whatever activation.
It's a fight or flight.
Exactly.
And we're consistently triggered by that. And I love that you brought that up, whether it's through headlines, through reels that come through social media, through being in a car. There are so many things throughout the day that trigger our fight or flight response. And we are not really taught the resources to come back to our animal body, as you say, which we do have. And again, it's a space that we can take lessons from animals. What do prey animals do after they've been chased by a lion? They shake.
Yeah.
They shake because it releases that hormone from their body and allows them to come back to a space of equilibrium. So again, we have these teachers all around us. And I think you bring up such a great point, and something that I've pursued myself a lot the last few years is, how do I come back to the body and not get carried away in the mind, which I think really contributes to that, to the disconnect, if we're not also cultivating the heart space and the body space.
Yeah. What are the things that you do to like go feel mammalian? Go feel.
I love that. Whatever. Well, I love being outside. You know, I love listening to the sounds of birds. I am a huge proponent of dance. I believe that we are movers, and that what I like to do, I'm actually trained as a somatic dance specialist. And so what I like to do is what I call intuitive dance. And so I will turn on songs and I will just move. And I find that what that does, it cultivates the trust that we talked about. It cultivates an ability to be more flexible with life, because maybe I'll do a move that feels strange, or I'll fall and I have to find a creative way to get back up. So it taps me into the creative energy that life to me is creation itself. It's from like that imagination we talked about. From every moment, there are endless possibilities. And so dancing, and often I will go do that in the sunshine, barefoot in the grass, music on low so I can hear the birds too. And it's, I am a body and I move and I am here. And this feels good. This feels good. And it reminds me that I don't have to be confined to anybody else's ideals of life or the structures of society.
That's the crux of it, right? Like mm-hmm. So much of what we're saying is like, yeah, we're here and it sucks. And it's just because somebody else decided mm-hmm. that this is how it has to be. And these are the systems that we operate in. And this is the truth that we live in. And mm-hmm. yeah, whether it's like just rejecting that on an individual, like corporeal level, like just, mm-hmm. yeah, just like I'm wiggling and I don't care if other people mm-hmm. don't think that wiggling is what to like the yeah. thing to do. Or if it's like, hey, community, this is what we've been given. Back mm-hmm. in 1976, they said, hey, community, we don't have recycling. I think we should. Mm-hmm. Let's change that. Like, mm-hmm. I think just being brave, being curious, being willing, being open mm-hmm. to being creative mm-hmm. to say, okay, not only is this not what we have to deal with just because we were given it, but also, yeah, like, let's just like see what our mm-hmm. mammalian bodies want to do. Let's see what like our instincts, let's see what our ancestors think.
So I'd love to, we've been going and this has been amazing. And I think we could just keep going forever. But I'd love to bring it back just a couple more questions back to your, one of your many masteries of recycling. And do you have some tips and insights for people in their daily life to embrace this gateway act of conservation? Mm.
Well, like everything we've been saying, mm-hmm. just start with one tiny thing. I know that that's cliche and it sounds unhelpful, but I think especially with waste, it's like, even if you're looking, you don't have to be looking at a landfill to be overwhelmed with the amount of waste that mm-hmm. you are making. Like mm-hmm. just looking at your trash can is like mm-hmm. it's been a week. How is this? And even me, like I, me again, this is my whole thing. Like zero waste is my whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I look at my trash can every week and I'm like, and it's just because, again, I have, what am I going to do if I don't have a package-free option for that?
Oh, yeah. And you're thing. Like you said, cucumbers are wrapped in cellophane. Like there's no other way to buy them.
Gotta eat, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that so what I recommend is that people just do, again, only with like curiosity, only with kindness to yourself, starting with just a personal waste audit is mm-hmm. a really great way mm-hmm. to just like see what would be the easiest thing to start with. Mm-hmm. Like see what that lowest hanging fruit is. And so if you just take your bin and just like, you can start, I like to do trash and recycling because even if something's recyclable, I want to reduce it mm-hmm. if I can. But if you just want to start with trash, if that feels more approachable to you, like just literally taking, like putting newspaper down, dumping out the contents of your trash and then just like looking at it. You don't have to like do something, you know, intimidating, literally just like looking at it. Because one of the things, again, with this linear economy and the disconnect that comes with it is that like we don't see it all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And even 1 week of like seeing it at the same time can just be like, oh, well, why am I buying, if I'm eating like 20 of these things in a week, whatever, these little snack things, but I'm buying them individually wrapped, like, but I can see that I've eaten 20 of them. I don't need them to be individually wrapped. Like I know that there's an option to buy them in bulk or mm-hmm. whatever. That could be like, even that is probably going to be packaged. Like just if you can make like that extremely simple, like I reach for this one instead of 20 of these ones or whatever. It doesn't matter even if you take an action, honestly, even if you don't have a goal that comes obviously from this process, even if you're just like, oh, well now I have a better sense of who I am as a consumer and I can carry that forward. Even that is like an act of action. Mm-hmm. And from there, you're just going to build awareness, which builds momentum, which builds action. Like I want everyone to kind of feel like it's not like this big undertaking that they have to like, okay, I have to set this goal and then I have to do all these things to like achieve the goal. It's more like as you get curious and as you start to learn more about it, it'll just come mm-hmm. automatically. Like you won't, if you're learning more about yourself, connecting more about with yourself and your own habits and what you tend to reach for and act like as a consumer, then the next time you are acting as a consumer, you will just have that information to make new, like you won't have to be like, okay, check my list of all the things I have to do. It'll just come with caring because again, inherently you, whoever you are, mm-hmm. are good. You are resourceful. You are smart. You do care. I know that. Like I just know it of all of us. So I would say tangibly start a little self audit, even if you do it one time and it like makes you feel bad, just like leave it alone for a little bit, come back to it. Mm-hmm. But I do think it just lends itself very, like, it just tumbles into all of these other acts of care that you'll find waiting for you.
So it's like that awareness is the inception for accountability, alchemizing your actions, and just to allow it to grow on its own from that root of awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with that, like I mentioned this before, but like, seriously, call your trash people, call your recycling people, figure out where your stuff is going. If you can, visit that place. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of landfills will let you do a tour, or they'll let you at least, you know, come and check it out. Recycling center, same thing. Like you can often book a recycling center tour. Mm. And again, just like that act of giving yourself more information, it makes you more empowered. It makes you more equipped. It makes you more connected. Mm-hmm. It makes you trust yourself more because you're making decisions that you know are founded on you actually making that decision rather than just grabbing whatever you're handed or believing whatever you're told or whatever the situation is. The act of being curious will give you more power
and more experience to pull that trust from that you're speaking to. Because often we do, we trust more what we experience. So broadening our experiences.
Yes.
And I love that you shared that because it does make it feel more accessible. It's a good reminder that, oh, I don't have to have it all figured out or have the end game of how I'm gonna transform my whole life. Let me just see what is happening in my life. Let me take a little bit deeper look at right now and the rest will come.
And I think like that comes with, we've been talking about joy and I think that's so important.
Me too.
And I think the joy of nerdiness is so key, like in getting anything done. I think in order to get anything done, you have to be a nerd for that thing. Like, I think nerdiness is just like passion and information together.
I like that.
Right? It's like, I know a lot about this thing and it's all I think about. Yeah, it's like totally. All I am focused on. And with recycling, it's kind of the same thing where it's like there's so many materials and there's so many nuances and there's so many steps that like it is really easy to like, I think a lot of my job is just like talking to people who are like just getting into it and then they get deeper and deeper into it and then we just get nerdier and nerdier about it. And then again, that's just like without even trying, it's just effortless work and passion and intention. So yeah, I think touring the recycling center is a great place to start because you can really like, you know, like how toddlers are obsessed with trash day? Do you know this?
Yes, I do.
I have like toddlers who are like fans who are like, they legitimately, I did a little like a kids day event over the weekend and I had a kid ask me if I could get the recycling truck's autograph for them. And I said, I was just like, truck. Like, for them, it's like the nerdiness is our, they're like, this is sick. Like, this truck and this robot. And like, again, like, even if that's your entry point, is that like, you think robots are cool, recycling's the place for you. I'll tell you, we got a lot of robots. Like, I think trying to become a nerd about it is another great place to start. And it's easy.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
I love that. I had another podcast conversation with Dave of Katie Addison Conservation Fund and his bio. He's a self-proclaimed animal nerd. And we had this conversation somewhat parallel that was just about like, allow yourself to be a nerd. And it goes back to what we were speaking to earlier. Allow yourself to fall in love with what you love and the rest will work itself out. You will fulfill an integral part of what we need. And what the planet needs.
Right. And because it's a group project, you don't have to worry about doing it at all. Yeah. Just like what feels organically exciting to you. Great. That's your role.
Well, this has been so wonderful. We ended up in so many cool places. I'm just so grateful to have had this conversation with you and get to know you better and just be in your energy and your joy. And I love that the conversation came back to that so much because I do deeply, deeply believe that joy is one of the most important ways forward.
Absolutely.
And so I would love to ask, because I had a whole list of questions, but we went so many wonderful directions. I don't even remember if I asked them all. But I would love to know, is there any last things you want to share that are on your mind, heart, body for our audiences to hear?
I think we've covered a lot of stuff. And I think, it's just kind of a conclusion sentence.
Love it.
I think I want everyone to feel like it's not your fault I want you to feel like you have power. I mean, I want you to feel these things because they are true.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to feel like you're not alone. Mm-hmm. There are, yeah, like we've just been gabbing for an hour and a half or whatever. And I feel like I could do that with just kind of not any environmentalist off the street.
Yeah.
I have had such a fun talking with you specifically, but I just mean like.
I get you.
Yeah, there's kinship everywhere. Like we've talked about whatever you're bringing is helpful, but also whatever you care about, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everything really is everything in that whether you are working hard for social justice, whether you're working hard for ecological health, whether you're working on plastics, whether you're working on pesticides, whether you're just, you just care about looking at birds,
mm-hmm.
like all of these things are the same thing. And I think a lot of the conversations that I have with community members is that they are concerned that they're not doing enough and that there's so much to do that they're paralyzed or they feel like all of their efforts would be split between a million different things that they care about. Yeah. And my thing is like, you don't have to volunteer with me. If you are volunteering for people with disabilities, mm-hmm. that is volunteering for me. Like if you are volunteering with banding birds, that is volunteering with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of these things are building, they're working toward the same future that we're all co-creating together.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if the only thing that you do around plastics or waste or whatever is, you know, one of the tiny things we talked about, even if you just like bring your reusable mug one time,
mm-hmm.
perfect. Just like figure out what your access point is.
Yeah.
We'll all get there together. And let's really try to stay giggly about it. Like, and hold space for the grief. Like we can't, yeah. We can't pretend like everything's not filled with emotion around this.
Oh yeah.
We have to be laughing and we have to be crying and we have to be like holding space for that as well. Like if you do find yourself like, I cannot access that joy. I cannot access
mm-hmm.
like giggling, whatever. Yeah. Sure. Access sobbing, access screaming, mm-hmm. access, like you said, shaking,
mm-hmm.
access sprinting, like whatever your body needs to feel to process it, do that and we'll bring joy along with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was beautifully said. It was a great ending statement. I think it sums up everything really well. And just thank you again. Thank you for being you. Thank you for the work that you do through EcoCycle and through your existence and all your other access points that I haven't even gotten to know yet because you are a wonderfully multifaceted being. So,
wow. Well, thank you. Dory, thank you so much. It was truly such a pleasure to talk to you from Pokemon to Pokemon. Like, we're just a bunch of weird little guys. So I'm so grateful, yeah, to be here with you and everyone that we work with.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. Me too. And thank you to everyone who has tuned in from whenever and wherever you have tuned in from. You are incredible. Just keep being you and it'll all work out. Thank you again, and tune in next time for more connection and more conversations and more conservation. And there you have it. This has been The Curious Bird. Thank you to our guests, our editor, Joe Escanos, and to you, our audience, for your time, curiosity, and openness. If you'd like to see these conversations continue, we would greatly appreciate your consideration in donating to our nonprofit, which you can do at the link in the episode information. Your generosity helps keep the conversations and our work flowing. To the bird lovers, the bird curious, the heart-centered, and any and every listener, until next time, when we meet again to build bridges, heal from separation, remember interconnectedness, and hear from the real inspired voices that are creating change in service to coexistence.